Hey everybody, welcome to episode 14 of Omaha Talks. We are in the house at Yoshitomo doing a remote episode today. Yoshitomo Sushi in Benson. And I am your co-host Parker Steele, in with co-host
Brandon Herbal.
And today our guest is owner, operator, chef of Yoshitomo Sushi, Dave Utterback. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Hi.
So we just kind of popped in. Dave's doing a little prep and getting ready for the day. What time do you guys open?
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock. And how long are you?
4 to 9.
4 to 9?
Yeah, it's a pretty easy day.
Cool.
How early do you have to come in to prep? And
it depends. Every day, just kind of depending upon the fish that comes in. Sometimes I got to go to the airport.
Oh, that's right.
Pick up the fish at, like, you know, 9 a.m. and then, you know, rock some music and sling some fish.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So how long have you guys been open?
This is week 17.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's just like a baby. You're like, you count it by the week.
Right.
By the months or the years.
Yep. I know exactly how that goes. How do you feel, man? Like, what got you to this point? I know that's kind of a loaded question, but...
I feel great. I'm super happy with where the restaurant's at. We're kind of improving every day, which is something you want a restaurant to do. You don't ever want to, like... We've all been to restaurants maybe right after they've opened where, like, you kind of know that's as good as it's ever going to get.
Sure.
Like, that restaurant's never going to improve. Like, you know, Applebee's is never getting any better.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
But we're finding ways to improve things every day. And so that's pretty great. And, you know, the reception has just been awesome. It's I expected to do okay, but I didn't expect to do this well.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, you definitely nailed the location.
Yeah.
I mean, solid location.
I mean, who knew that an old Subway
right.
could be where all this magic happens.
I know, man. God.
One day, cold cut trios.
Oh. Meatball subs. Next day.
$5 footlongs.
Yeah. I mean, this was one of the most robbed, like, businesses in all of the city. And we haven't even been robbed once.
So right.
That's, like, a huge improvement.
Right. Yep. Knocking on wood. I have to ask, when you first moved in, was the Subway smell still going on?
The Subway smell is still here. Like, in some places, like, there's, like, some closets and some back rooms, and, like, if you close your eyes, like, you can smell that damn bread.
Oh, my God. It's like, insane. Yeah. It's toxic.
Urban cheese bread or whatever.
It's, like, seven-grain yoga mat.
Yeah. It's really just plastic.
Yeah.
Yoga mat, exactly. So how did you start... Have you always worked in sushi, or have you done other things?
You know, when you kind of start out cooking, you kind of float all over the place. But, you know, sushi's, at the end of the day, what I'm the best at.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of makes more sense to continue doing that than trying to, like, you know, try to do a million other types of cooking.
Right.
Mediocre.
Right.
Yeah,
do what you know. Did you, like, what are some of the restaurants that you've worked at, or what's some of the cuisine you've worked at outside of sushi?
I mean, last year I was doing the ramen shop at the mall.
Okay.
Yoshiya.
Love it.
I was the corporate chef with Flagship, that does Blue Roja Plank.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of opportunities to, like, cook a lot of different kinds of food, cuisines, desserts, pastry, hot food, cold food, you know, that. And, you know, and then in the past, it's just your regular lineup of just terrible kitchen jobs, you know.
Right.
Like,
I've had a couple
short
of
order burger, you know, flipping, you know.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yep. Grease loving.
Yeah.
So we were talking about before the show started that sometimes you have to go to the airport to get your fish.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that, because I think that kind of sets you apart from...
Yeah, I only really know... Only Keen here in town at Umami is picking up fish at the airport. You know, it's... You just have much more access to different fish and better fish. There's a truck or two and some local vendors that will kind of drive a truck up to your back door and drop some stuff off. But, you know, it's not anything I'd ever really want to serve people.
Right.
You know, if we're trying to do better, then we have to, you know, find the best stuff. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's not like all of the fish comes, you know, flies in every morning, you know, but anything out of the ordinary, anything special, you know, we're trying to play on the level of L.A. and New York, Seattle, you know, these big sushi towns, and so
no small feat,
right?
Well,
so we have
only
to,
unlocked state.
Yeah, yeah,
so we have to, like, if we want to kind of play on their level, then we have to get the fish that they get.
Right. Now, in making those connections, like, did you know a guy who knew a guy, or did you establish this yourself?
Well, luckily, you know, coming from kind of a big corporate background, like, I've had a, you know, half that job, you know, in a corporate kitchen is just finding vendors and sourcing food and finding out what's best, working in test kitchens. And so, you know, after 13 years of you know, kind of doing the job, you know, you have an idea of who's got what, where the top sushi bars are getting their fish.
Sure.
You know, sometimes it's even as easy as just me Facebook messaging a Michelin star chef in New York and being like, hey man, where did you get some fish? And,
right.
You know, the sushi community is pretty cool about, you know, if it seems like you're not just some hack off the street and you're trying to do good, you know, a lot of times they're more than happy to kind of divulge their sourcing and even some of the technique too.
That's cool. Yeah.
And you've actually traveled to Japan several times, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah, I go to Japan every year for at least 2 weeks.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Do you? So I'm assuming you go to, like, I've seen some documentaries about the fish markets out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
the fish market.
Intense.
Don't quote me, but something like 60 or 70% of all seafood in the world passes through the Tokyo fish market.
Wow.
You know, so. You know, the actual market itself is a couple football fields of just vendors selling individual, you know, things. Like, it's not like the grocery store. There's, like, just a guy, he just sells mackerel.
Right.
You know, just a guy, he sells shrimp. And so you have hundreds and hundreds of multi-generational guys just selling specific things.
Yeah.
It's crazy down there. Like,
a lot of heritage involved in it.
Yeah, oh yeah,
craftsmanship,
yeah.
Really. I mean, because, mm-hmm. like, I've seen, I can't remember what the documentary was, but, you know, these guys that were buying the fish,
mm-hmm.
and that was their designated job.
Yeah.
For whomever. And, I mean, so much goes into it, you know, just everything about the fish, looking it up and down.
Yeah.
Is that something that you get involved with?
I can't, you know. Then that's one of the big downsides to sushi in the U.S. is, like, we don't have access to, you know, a fresh fish market.
Right.
You know, so I have to rely on Japanese fish brokers to just go pick stuff up and ship it to me. And, you know, I'm kind of stuck with whatever they send. You
right.
know, they're not going to send garbage because then I just want my money back.
Sure.
But at the same time, you know, they're also stuck with whatever's available at the market.
Right.
So, you know, the level of sushi here in the U.S., I don't think can ever really approach, you know, the sushi in Japan,
right.
At a craftsman level, at least, because we just, I can't go down to the market and look at 20 different tunas and pick the one I want.
Right.
You know, a tuna just shows up and I'm like, well, this is the tuna we've
work.
Got today.
Yeah, right.
We either got to make it work or we have to throw it out.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of disappointing to know something like that. Like, unless you're willing to go to Japan and live there, like, there is just a level. There's, like, a ceiling,
mm-hmm.
you know. That's going to be the big difference between over there and over here is just, you know, they have access to that. And since it's over there already, it's cheaper. You know, so, like, you have to pay a premium to have anything that's slightly comparable over here.
Right.
And it just, there's a lot of obstacles to making something like that work.
Makes it that much more worthwhile.
Yeah, you know,
you know?
if you find a sushi joint that's really going out of their way to get some different items and kind of keep pushing you know, the cuisine forward, that's a pretty special spot, I think.
Yeah.
And there's not, you know, I eat a lot of sushi in the United States in every big city, and I just don't find those places very often. When I do, you know, I'm like stoked.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you go to Japan once a year, 2 weeks. Outside of sushi-related things. What else do you do in Japan?
That's it.
That's it.
Like, literally, I'm not joking. I it's like 6 or 7 meals a day.
Oh, God.
2 or 3 tasting menus. In between is just like ramen and yakitori. And I walk a lot of it. So, like, the only time I see the sites, like, I've seen all of the tourist sites in Japan, but it's usually on the way, you know. So, like, oh, Tokyo Tower. Well, that's on the way to this, you know, Kaiseki restaurant. Oh, Imperial Gardens. That's on the way to this, like, ramen shop. So, like, I spend 10 or 15 minutes looking at this thing while I'm, like, running.
And then back to
food. Yeah, and then it's, like, back to food. And it's great because I need that exercise to burn all of those calories that I'm ingesting all day.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
But
do you need anyone to carry your bag?
Yes.
Love to be your caddy.
I'm not kidding. Like, anyone who wants to go with me is, like, kind of welcome to come along. But, like, we have a pretty serious conversation where I'm, like, you're, like, dead weight to me. If you can't, like, eat on a competition level,
right,
then, like, you need to hang back in the hotel, because I got things I got to do.
Absolutely.
Are you going there to just try different, like, dishes and get different flavors for, like, coming back home, or, like...
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, there's a couple different ways to kind of build up an experience level and a palate and a taste memory for chefs. And you either work at a whole bunch of restaurants and get a whole bunch of experience in the back of the house, or you go out and you eat just a ton of awesome food. You know, how do you know what's going to taste good unless you've had it?
Right.
You know, if all you've had is McDonald's cheeseburgers, like, you can't really go back into your kitchen and make the best cheeseburger anyone's ever had, because you just don't have that. You don't know what the top of the mountain is like.
No frame of reference.
Right, yeah. Right. Limited. So, like, for me, you know, in Omaha, we have a serious lack of, you know, professional next level Japanese restaurants. And so the way I get my experience is I just go spend ridiculous amounts of money on just crazy tasting menus in Japan. And then I come home and I try to, like, do a half-assed job, you know, copying the things that I see.
We'll say interpreting.
Sure. There you sure. go. No, but it really, that's what it is. I see something and I'll be in Kyoto or Osaka and I'll have a meal and I'm like, wow, that was damn good. I want to go home and I want to try that. And then I spend a couple of months trying to figure it out and it gets to a point where I'm like, well, this is, like, pretty good.
It's close enough.
It's, I mean, it's, you know, we don't have the opportunity to have anyone, like, show us how to do it here.
Sure.
You know, so we have to be our own teachers. We have to, we have to learn by doing. And so, that's what it is. You go over there and you go, wow, I've never seen anything like this before. Let's see if we can do it here.
Yeah.
Now, while you're over there, have you learned or got an experience to work with anyone over there? Or is it truly just, like, more from a palate and taste side of things? It
really, you know, there are some random stages here and there. You know, it's more just hanging out in someone's kitchen while they do their thing. Because, you know, there's a little bit of a language barrier.
Right.
So not much actual hands-on. Other than kind of a few small instances here and there. But, you know, really, it is to a point where I don't really need to be in the kitchen to kind of have an idea of what they did. You know, really, if I know kind of the ingredients and the technique, Japanese cooking is pretty simple that way. They're not trying to mask flavors or do anything that changes the way an item tastes. They just try to enhance it present it in a better way. So, you know, really in Japanese cooking, there's 2 or 3 techniques, and it's just kind of how you apply those.
Cool. Plus, you're on vacation.
Yeah. So. I mean, it is a vacation. Like, the last thing I want to do is, like, really work.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and just for everybody listening, a stage is when you work in somebody's kitchen for free in order to learn.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, really a stage is, you go in someone's kitchen, they hand you a box of turnips, and they tell you to peel them.
Sure.
You know, they don't let you do anything cool.
Yeah.
You know, right. It's just an excuse to hang out in somebody's, like, just baller kitchen, you know, while they make amazing food.
Sure.
You know? And what's really cool about staging is it doesn't matter what level of chef or cook you are. Like, everybody still wants to hang out in somebody else's kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're traveling around Japan, do you spend a lot of time in, like, metropolitan areas, like cities, or do you spend time in, like, rural areas and, like, maybe lesser-known spots?
When I started out, it was, like, I have to see Tokyo. I have to conquer every little bit of this city. But now it's me trying to get out and find something outside of the city.
Yeah.
And travel more of the country. You find that each city has its own style of sushi, and after you've eaten a handful of joints, you kind of come to the realization it's like any other city in the world. Like, everybody's kind of cooking the same sort of food. All the sushi bars here are pretty much the same. All the sushi bars in Des Moines are all the same.
Yeah.
All the sushi bars in Tokyo are the same. It's crazy. I mean, there's 30,000 of them, but even on at the very top of that, everybody's menus are kind of the same. They're kind of using the same techniques. There are things that kind of separate each chef's style. The more you eat, the more you kind of can focus in on those styles. But, if after you've eaten, 20, 30 sushi tasting menus in Tokyo, it's, they're kind of all the same. Like, everyone's kind of like in a race to do the same perfect meal. The guys with 3 Michelin stars or whatever at the top, all the guys below that, are looking up to those guys and trying to emulate those things and, like, kind of make their meals as much like those 3 stars so they can get there.
Right.
And the guys at the bottom, it's just like any other, kind of restaurant. They just kind of do their thing, and everybody is doing the same.
Yeah.
And so getting out of the city, you start to get exposure to just regional cuisine.
Yeah.
Is where sushi actually starts to get pretty cool. Like, there's just a lot of really interesting kinds of sushi out there that we never have exposure to.
If you had to, like, on your last trip, like, what was something that really blew your mind?
On the last trip, I found myself with another chef in a city called Sakai. It's a knife city. All they have a long history of just making knives. Chef knives, hunting knives. It's just a blacksmith city.
It's awesome.
And there was this sushi place, an omakase room, that had been there for about 100 years. The chef there had been there for 30 or 40 years, and his son was starting to take over, and it was pretty well regarded in the area, but would never show up on any sort of, like, list of places you've got to go.
Right.
And the meal there was just insane. Like, they were making this southern Japan-style sushi that was just, like, unlike anything I'd ever had. They were doing things to fish, and the preparations and flavors were different, and, kind of changed the course of my sushi. Like, when you do sushi, you're always told there's rules and there's things that you have to do. And after that meal, I kind of realized that I didn't have to do those things. Like, I could actually just do what I wanted to do and what I thought was good, and not try to do what everyone, like, in Tokyo was doing, like, chase this cuisine and chase this level that, like, honestly, we can't ever get to here. But we can do something different, here in Omaha. And I tasted a lot of those flavors in southern Japan. Southern Japan the cooking is very much like the Midwest. It's like real comfort food, rich, savory foods. And so that meal was pretty dope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you get a chef's knife?
I have so many chef's knives now that, like, I don't really come back with them anymore because what it takes to, like, get me off now is so insane. Like,
sure.
It has to be, like, bladesmith forging in a cave or a mountain with steel from Mars. Like, they have to be, like, it's like the best of the best.
Oh, yeah.
Like the Hattori Hanzo.
Yeah. No, knives. I get that, man.
Yeah.
That guy I don't know what his name is, and I bring this up, but he makes knives out of meteorite.
Yeah.
Iron derived from meteorite?
Yeah, actually, I've been secretly, I've been secretly trying to get one made for about 3 years.
The secret's out.
I hope no other sushi chefs, try to steal my idea. They won't have the money to execute, neither do I, but I've been trying to get, a master craftsman in Japan to make me a sashimi knife out of meteorite.
Yeah.
And they've been turning me down for 3 years, mostly because they don't know how the meteorite steel is going to react with their steel, so they don't want to make a knife that could potentially fail,
right?
Be brittle or too hard, and then that's kind of their reputation.
It sounds like a baller knife.
Yeah, oh man,
yeah. Someday I'll get it made.
Yeah.
I found a guy in, I think he's in Australia, who said he would do it.
Okay.
But it's a little cost prohibitive at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I have a question about cream cheese
sure.
and sushi.
Sure.
Is that is that an American thing? Is that a Midwest
thing?
Yeah.
So the sushi that kind of we're exposed to here pretty much everywhere isn't actually a thing in Japan.
Right.
I assume.
I mean, you'll see California rolls here and there. But, cream cheese, Philadelphia rolls, those things, they just haven't made it over there.
Right.
And the few shops that do it, I don't think they're actually run by kind of Western chefs.
Mm.
So it's like a Japanese chef trying to reinterpret the California roll,
right.
And it just doesn't really come out. So no, it's not a thing over there. Here, yeah, it's totally a thing. Everybody... Sure, cream cheese and tuna
really well
together,
yeah.
I guess.
I don't really like it in the sushi, but
no.
I know it's just a big thing. And it's
There's places where it works. Sushi is a pretty, pretty big catch-all term, and a lot of things can be considered sushi. And I guess my opinion is it's not really for me, but... If that's what it takes to kind of get you in the door and
exactly,
maybe potentially getting you to eat better sushi later, great. Eat a million of those things.
It's totally that stepping stone.
Yeah.
You
need that thing. Maybe it's just cream cheese and cucumber. Now you're in the door, and while you're here, you try some tuna. You like that. A year later, you're in my omakase room eating a tasting menu. So, sure, it's a thing.
Man, I'm not going to say where, I'm not going to say when, but I had a roll not too long ago here in town, and aioli wasn't listed in the descriptor on the menu, but it was a main ingredient.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing was slathered.
Mayonnaise?
In mayonnaise, yeah. It was.
I mean, we do those things here, you kind of got to have that side of it, 95% of everybody who eats sushi around here has only eaten that kind of sushi.
Yeah, fair enough.
And the way kind of this sushi has developed in the West was with the idea that Westerners are squeamish about eating raw fish.
Yeah.
And so the more sauces and the more things we can put on to hide that is the way that you kind of sell that fish. You have to bring in the tuna. You have to bring in the salmon. You can't sell all of it in slices of nigiri and sashimi, so you have to put it in these rolls. And if you have guests that don't really want to eat those things plain, then what do? You squirt a whole bunch of mayonnaise on it,
right.
and you go from there.
Put some cream cheese on it.
You just have to move it. You have to get
it
out the door.
Right.
I mean, that's where those things came from. In Japan, they don't have that problem. Everyone's willing to just eat the fish by itself.
Yeah.
And so there's no need to sort of hide it, mask it, doctor it up, And so, really, this style of sushi is ours. It's like, it's a whole new, it's pretty cool. It's a whole new variation and like style of sushi that is not Japanese. Like, we have our own style of sushi. It's maybe a lot of mayonnaise and sweet sauces, but it's ours.
Sure.
It's, would you say ours by United States or like Midwest specifically? Like
The United States, but the Midwest has a has just ours just has a lot more mayonnaise and sugar.
Yeah,
the Husker roll, baby.
Yeah, you know, and when you think about it, that's like kind of crazy. You have this Japanese cuisine, and then you have this like small subsection of it that has nothing to do with really Japan. Like it's all ours. We developed it. We're pushing it forward, and you can do a lot of stuff with it. You know, it's a pretty wide open vehicle for innovation. Like I've seen chefs just do the craziest things with these sushi rolls, and we do a ton of that here. You know, the California roll pays the rent.
Yeah,
you know. Like
that's a great
the
quote.
Cheeseburger pays the rent, man.
Yeah.
The rest is the fancy stuff, but you got to have that everyday sushi to kind of pay the electric bill.
Yeah, and get them in the door.
Yeah, get them in the door.
And I mean, that's my experience. You know, I started there. Mm-hmm. You know, and now, I mean, I've never been picky about food, but
you throw anything in front of me.
It doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it took me so long to get there because fish has never been weird to me. But this part of the country, like, yeah, people don't. I mean, as a whole, like, there's not a general palate for
seafood or
seafood,
yeah,
especially
seafood
raw food.
Seafood restaurants don't do great around here. I mean, obviously, we don't. We're not next to any sort of big port with a big seafood tradition, and you know, any seafood we've had in the history of this city is kind of been geared more towards catfish fries and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, it's not really anyone's fault. It's just kind of where we're at.
Yeah.
Whatever nasty fish you get in the lake.
Sure. Snake of the lake.
Snake of the lake. Some carp.
River tuna.
Oh, man.
You know, but it's no fault of anyone. It's just kind of where we're at. Now, you know, the invention of flight has made things a lot easier to get, you know, really cool stuff from anywhere in the world. And so, you know, we have the opportunity now to kind of push our scene, our food scene, our sushi palettes, the level of sushi in the city kind of to a new level. And it's kind of about time.
Yeah.
I think.
I agree. Definitely. Well, obviously, I mean, your success thus far, right time, right place. Like,
yeah.
I think there's definitely a curiosity. What was the documentary on Netflix, Jiro Dreams of Sushi? The movie was huge.
Yeah.
You know, and I talked to a lot of people that are not interested in that kind of stuff, but they watched that movie, and now they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
you know?
And I ate there.
He there?
Yeah.
Wow.
Humble brag.
Wow.
But this was before it was cool, man.
Yeah.
This was like 9 years ago before the movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's that was one of the meals that sort of shaped my career, but one of those meals that shaped my career. The movie itself has really brought a lot of people into the more upscale tasting menu.
Sure.
Omakase. It people see that and they want to do it, and for me, when I host my omakases every month, that's sort of one of the things that we sort of have in common. We've seen that movie, you know. They may not know what they're coming into and have never had an omakase, but they've seen that movie.
Right.
You know, and, you know, their hope is maybe they can have something that's like kind of a similar experience.
Yeah, it's special.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that.
I was going to say, yeah, he's been doing it for years.
You do it, you said once a month.
It's 2 to 3 times a month.
Okay, cool.
And I would do it more if you know, there was a demand for it.
Okay, and what does that involve, like?
So, omakase is, it doesn't really have a direct, it doesn't have a direct sort of translation in English. It sort of means trust. I leave it up to you.
Okay.
You make the decision, and that's basically what it is. You come, you sit down, I serve you whatever I think is great. It's super seasonal, pretty high end. You know, it's you know, I wouldn't wouldn't bring you in and serve you 10 different kinds of California rolls.
Sure.
It's a great idea now.
Yeah, there it is.
No, but you come in, you sit down. Over 2 hours, we eat 18, 20, 25 courses of sushi.
Oh, God.
You know, and you think courses, you think giant plates, but it's just a bite.
Yeah.
You know, so you're eating 20-odd bites of sushi. Most of it is stuff you won't find on our actual menu. It's all flown in for the dinner. Rice is different. Preparations are different. I don't let anyone else touch any of the components of that meal. It's just me. And so you sit down, and I hand feed you like a baby bird for 2 hours.
That sounds chewed up.
I do all. It's like I'm the full total service package. Yeah. You just open your mouth, and I just put the food in.
Man. Oh, it's beautiful. That's got to be fun for
everybody.
We gotta
sign up.
Yeah, we're in, man. We got to do this. What would you... Okay, so we've been talking a lot about, you know, people new to sushi or where to start out. Like, where would you start somebody off if, say, they've had the California roll, they've had the Husker roll, you know, and they want to start building up? You know, where would you take them?
You know, I think we have a lot of things on our menu here that are sort of nigiri, fish on rice, but there's some preparation to them. They're not just plain fish on plain rice. We have an item here called yaki gendara. Gendara is a sable fish, and we torch that sable fish and get it nice and hot, and then we put the sweet miso sauce on it, and we torch that, and you eat that as a bite. And so it's not this...
That's awesome.
it's become our signature item here.
Okay.
It's our bloomin' onion. It's our potato olé,
yeah,
if you will. Everybody has to have one. But... You know, it's that in between. Oh, I don't want to eat just plain raw fish on rice. Well, here's something that's half raw. It's hot. It's mostly cooked. You know, it's sweet. It's savory. It's kind of the in between. And once, you know, you've had that, I think it kind of, you can kind of let your guard down. Like, oh, you know, not all sushi is just this creepy octopus, you know, on some rice. This is different. Okay, what else do you got? And then from there, you know, we can kind of move forward. A lot of times, I'll get guests in the omakase room that have never had sushi before.
Wow.
Like, somebody has literally dropped them, like, in the deepest part of the pool.
Yeah.
Without the floaties.
Right.
And then walked away.
Oh, man.
And they do really great. You know, sushi's, I think, very accessible.
I think if you go into it with an open mind, like, I mean, it's not, I don't know, some people get grossed out by a texture or what have you, but, like, the flavor is, I don't know.
Undeniable.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's nothing weird. You know, I feel like if you can do an oyster, sushi is probably good.
Yeah.
You know, like if eating an oyster is absolutely the grossest thing you can think of, you might want to steer clear of the sushi bar.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah, we actually have an episode.
We talk about oysters.
We talk about oysters and
my
first
them.
Experience.
Yeah,
yeah, we absolutely
I love
them
too.
Them.
I like to think about that guy, like the very first, you know, human who was like standing on a beach and he saw this oyster and he cracked it open and was like, I'm going to eat that.
Yeah.
I'm going to put that in my mouth.
Yeah. I bet he was hungry.
Yeah.
I bet he was hungry.
Hopefully he had some lemon.
Yeah, right. Maybe a little salt. That's a really good point. You know, speaking of oysters, you think about all those weird kind of mollusks, too. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, your scallops or...
scallops are literally... That's my favorite thing ever. Like, scallops are...
I call it milk meat. It's just like...
That's gross.
Milk meat.
Milk meat.
Oh, God. But you cut into it, and it's just so soft and white, and it just... I love it. Milk
I
meat.
Love
that is kind of gross.
It is really gross, but I love it.
I love them. You know, in my last job, you know, I sell more scallops here than I... Maybe in a week than I have in my whole career... The 12 years before, we sell so many scallops.
Wow.
That was another dish I had here, the one with the sriracha milk.
Yeah, the sriracha buttermilk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, the Serpico.
I just made him aware that you guys do skip the dishes, so he's going to, like,
yeah,
order them.
I'm not too far away. And for our listeners as well, skip the dishes. Check it out.
Yeah, we recently started doing Skip the Dishes and Uber Eats, and like, it's great. We do. A lot of people don't want to do dishes, apparently.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
They want to skip the dishes every night.
Oh, my God. Yeah, or get in your car and schlep around with the baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I talk to people that are really skeptical about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want somebody digging their fingers into my French fries. I'm like, dude, it wouldn't work if it flew like that. You know, I'm sure it's happened.
I heard before we got into it, we were trying to get some feedback from some people. And we had someone tell us that, like, a delivery driver showed up to their house with, like, an assault rifle strapped to their back.
Wow.
And then you signed up right there.
Well, yeah, and I'm just saying, like, man, you knew nobody was going to steal your food.
Yeah.
Like, they protected your food all the way to the door.
This guy took his job incredibly seriously.
Yeah.
I've only had good experiences with it. I mean, we don't do it terribly often, but, you know, I've probably done it 4 times in the last 6 months, and it's just convenient when it's like, you know, the kids are going crazy and, you know, don't want to cook.
Yeah.
So.
Do your kids eat sushi?
So, Van does not like sushi at all, but Rilo will eat the shit out of it.
Really?
She loves it. Loves sushi.
She's pretty food friendly, though, isn't she? She's
open-minded to it. At her mom's house, they eat vegan, so she doesn't eat a ton of meat, but we can get her to eat fish and sushi. She, like, loves it. So
man, that's huge.
That's, like, our date night. Like, if it's just her and I and, like, you know, go out with a, you know, father-daughter date, we go to get it sushi, and she just loves it.
That's awesome.
And everyone also thinks it's, like, really cute because this little kid, like, loves sushi.
Right. But, well, yeah. She's pretty cute anyway.
Yeah. But, yeah, she loves it.
And you got a 2-year-old?
Yeah.
Has he had any fish yet?
He doesn't. He only eats, like, chips and pizza. That's like it.
I think
he only eats like snack packs.
Right.
It's like me in the 90s.
I know.
He doesn't have a refined palate yet.
Right.
Yeah. That's coming.
That's funny, man. Yeah, I can't wait. I mean, my little guy's 8 weeks yesterday, so we haven't done the food thing yet. But I've been talking about it a lot. I'm like, you know, and my wife's like, you're probably gonna make baby food, aren't you? You're gonna make it. And I'm like, oh, I'm gonna try.
You start out doing all that stuff, and then you're like, oh man,
no more. That's exactly what
I mean. We tried the disposable diaper thing for about 3 months, and we're like, yeah, disposables are just easier. You know,
you mean the cloth? You start off with cloth.
Yeah, cloth. Yeah.
Oh God, I can't imagine.
Well, especially your first child. You go on with the intention of being like the best parent who's ever been a parent, and then after a few months, you're like,
it literally goes out.
Right.
Any convenience. Disposable diapers, formula, whatever.
Formula.
Like, I'm not going to let my kid stare at an iPad all day. And now I'm like, here, man, go take this iPad and go away.
No, that's how it goes. So, Parker, I give you 6 months.
Oh, I'm very idealistic. Yeah. You know, I like to. But, you know, it's, I do think about it, though. You know, like, what kind of foods. Because, I mean, your kiddo had some allergies and stuff you had to work through, and that was...
Yeah, she had peanut and egg allergies. Not so much egg anymore, but still like peanut and sesame seed. So when we do get sushi, can't have sesame seed on it.
Right.
But she is adventurous, like loves all types of vegetables and fish and those types of things.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, I was always kind of raised with the rule, like, you don't know until you try it. And not being a little chubbo, I was just like, oh, you got it. I'll try it. Put it. It's there.
Yeah,
like, let's do it.
Yeah.
But that's something that I've definitely thought about. I'm just like, I do not want to have a picky eater kid. Which, again, idealistic. You know, it is what it is.
Yeah,
but
you don't. I don't think you really get a choice. Like, they just eat whatever it is that they're going
to
eat.
Right.
Well, that's the other thing is, like, them being introduced to it, like, early on, and that's just the only thing that they know. So that's, like, part of it. But I felt I was picky until I was in my 20s. I mean, I just ate, stupid shit all the time.
Man.
Like, just your burgers and just terrible shit.
Yeah, I ate garbage up until, like, yesterday.
Yeah.
Straight garbage.
I mean, I don't know. I just, having, like, single mom who wasn't around a lot, so I just kind of had to learn how to cook. And it was by way of just being hungry.
Yeah.
And being like, oh, rice-a-roni, little water.
It was mac and cheese.
Right,
it was like mac and cheese.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I was pretty lucky. My mom kind of grew up on an island outside of Japan on a farm where they did everything by hand.
Wow.
And so, like, I feel like I'm from... My mom is from one of the last kind of generations of, like, old-timey Japanese women, you know, who, like, made their own miso, made their, you know, just made everything from scratch because that's how they had to do it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so, like, mom cooked, and, like, she really, really cooked. Whereas I think that's changing in Japan now. There isn't much cooking. Your apartments barely have a kitchen in it. You know,
right.
Everything's microwave, or you get it from the convenience store, which is, by the way, the most amazing food, like, ever. The convenience store food in Japan is one of my 7 meals a day.
Yeah.
Like, every day.
What's your go-to?
I like to do the gyoza there. The gyoza, the convenience store gyoza dumplings are better than any, like, dumpling I've had, like, anywhere else in the world.
Man.
We need to stop talking about food. Every episode we ever do is about food.
It always goes back to food.
You can get anything at these convenience stores, like Hiyashi chuka noodles, tonkatsu, salads, pizza, lasagna, pasta, sandwiches, flan. It doesn't matter. Like, and it's all amazing.
Yeah.
So a majority of the people who live in the big city just don't have access to cooking for themselves.
Sure.
And so this whole convenience store system has developed there to provide all of these convenience stores, which are like just right next to each other. There'll be like 5 of the same convenience store, maybe sometimes even the exact same convenience store, like right across the street.
Wow.
So you don't have to cross the street. And there is fresh food delivered every morning and taken out every night.
Cool.
And it's so amazing.
And you were saying this is because of, like, population and the
mm-hmm,
size of the...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know,
sense.
A lot of, like, people to feed.
Yeah, and so, you know, you go to a convenience store at about 8 o'clock at night, and the shelves are just empty. Like,
wow.
Like, everybody's come in and bought every single piece of food in that whole place. It's so... God, I want it, like,
yeah.
Right now.
I want it right now. Yeah.
I mean, so, like, on that, too, like, when... You go there for 2 weeks. Do you feel like that? If you were telling someone to go, like, if we were to go to Japan, I mean, like, what time frame do we need to, like, really get a feel for it?
I think 2 weeks is pretty good. 10 days, I think you can see a lot of the city. If you had an extra 3 or 4 days, you can get out of the city and go swing down to Kyoto or Osaka. Maybe do a day trip to Fuji or. One of kind of the surrounding areas. There's a lot of really cool day trips. 7 days in Tokyo. 7 to 10 days in Tokyo, you can see all of Tokyo.
That's intense, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it just looks like an intense town.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think people realize there's, like, something like 30 million people kind of in Tokyo and then surrounding it. Like, the city just never ends. There's
right.
a certain point where they're like, this isn't Tokyo anymore. But it's still Tokyo. Like, you can take a train for 2 hours and, like, never leave Tokyo.
That's crazy.
You know, New York is, like, 4 or 5 million.
Right.
You know, and, you know, New York's huge.
Yeah.
30 million.
It's like,
that's
it just,
great.
Like, never ends. It's crazy.
What kind of hotel do you stay? I mean, do you bounce around?
Now it's Airbnbs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I found some pretty cool Airbnbs.
Sweet.
Yeah.
God, man. That is such a good thing.
Let's talk to the wives. Let's book a trip.
Yeah, right?
It's super easy to go to Japan. Like, the whole country's in English. You know, menus are in English. If you're in the big city, menus are in English. Signs are in English. Directions are in English. You go on the subway, it tells you in English where you're going. You don't have to speak any of the language other than thank you, I'm sorry, and where's the bathroom.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
If you had to recommend one city in the United States outside of Omaha, outside of this restaurant, that you have had, like, some of the best sushi, where would you say it's
New
at?
York.
New York.
New York,
yeah.
is serving the best sushi in the country overall. It's had just a recent surge of just omakase spots, places that just do sushi tasting menus. I think 3, 4, 5 opened in the last year, and that doubled kind of the amount that was open the year before.
Wow.
And so omakase as a form of entertainment and a meal, like, is becoming its own, popular on its own.
Cool.
And New York, somehow, it is the furthest probably on the earth that you can be from Japan, but it's got a really large Japanese population, and the sushi there is, it's just unmatched.
Yeah.
Really.
Makes sense. It's a good food town. I haven't been there in 10 years, but my God.
I went there last summer, and yeah, I mean, all we did was eat.
Thank God you're walking around.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus. Well, man, I want to thank you again for coming, letting us hang out, be on the show. Is there anything you want to let the listeners know? The mic is yours.
You know, if you haven't had a chance to come down to Yoshitomo, you know, we're still kind of a secret. You can still get some seats at the sushi bar, and the sushi bar is where you need to be. Sitting at a table, you're not really getting the full experience. Sushi is kind of, it's interactive a little bit.
Sure.
So come in, sit at the sushi bar, come say hi. I'm about to get an actual sign put up here on Maple, and I think after that, like, good luck trying to get in. Right now, we just have a neon sign to let you know we're here, and that's it. Like, most of the neighborhood, a lot of the neighborhood doesn't know that we're here.
Right.
Like, they walk by every day and they have no idea the restaurant's here. And so I have to get a sign.
Have you had anyone come in mistaking that the subway was still here?
Oh, God.
No.
No, that's
but I get a bunch of people who come in who think we're the ramen shop down the street.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe every couple of days they'll come in and they sit down and they're like, I want some ramen. I'm like, oh, that's Ika down the street,
yeah,
right. Which is great.
Yeah.
Which is not here.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, in the age of smartphones, people shouldn't be making those mistakes.
Yeah.
But God bless them. They're trying.
Yeah,
we've got a roll that has three different kinds of fish in it. It's called Three Kings, but its original name was the Cold Cut Trio.
Oh,
nice.
So.
A little throwback.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right, man. Well, thanks again.
Yeah.
For you guys listening, check out Yoshitomo. And
skip the dishes. Come down here,
sit at the sushi bar, check them out on Facebook.
Yep.
You got a website?
Yep.
Cool. Check them out, and thanks for tuning in. Brandon, you got anything?
Hutch next week.
Oh, yeah.
Doing the guys at Hutch. But yeah, thanks again for letting us come in.
Yeah, it was fun.
All right. Cheers.